Cabo Days, Part 1. Gliding effortlessly through customs, I am instantly met by the jackals, the vultures, that feast upon the innocence of tourists. Make no mistake, these are professionals, savage in their determination to relieve unsuspecting pilgrims of their wealth and prosperity. Do you wish to see the sail? Whales, an earnest, sincere, and impeccably groomed jackal asks. Señor, I know where you can swim with them. Another jackal offers, hurriedly trying to place brochures, pamphlets, leaflets, all manner of brightly printed propaganda into my now sweating hands. The late afternoon sun beats down upon us. I am not used to such a climate, coming from the north, where snow and cold is the order of the day. But here in the land of the Olmecs, the sun shines bright upon its children. I admire these tenacious devils and their enterprising offers of help to an intrepid traveler. Their actions provide a fine breeding ground for future politicians. Gleefully searching for the sad victim that lags behind the pack, the pathetic soul that attempts an honest discourse with the predator before them, they unmercifully rape their victims with their smooth banter and deceitful lies. Politicians the world over cannot hold a candle to these jackals as they ravish the innocents before them, deftly seizing profits ascribed to them by the gods. I roar to the jackals surrounding me, "May the blood of Christ anoint you!" A parting of predators quickly takes place. They abandon me in a flash, tossing signals to their brethren ahead of them, telling them, "Leave this gringo alone. He breathes the language of our Lord." 2. As I arrive at the end of the gauntlet, I am approached by a slight child. Approached, however, is a rather awkward word, as she merely stood to the side and whispered, "I have what you desire." Amidst the cacophony of noise, I almost miss her call, though in truth I now admit I could hear her over all the others. I find myself drawn to this child, dressed in a plain white dress, sandals, and a bright pink ribbon in her hair. I look down at her, assuring her I am not interested in any desires. She reaches out and holds my hand, softly telling me that she alone understands. She recognizes my desire to find the hidden writings of Hermann Hesse, the long-fabled tome of his notes, poetry, and early prose from his youth, all collected in one reverent book. The sun is beginning to set. Taxis are beginning to thin. She leads me to a dust-covered sedan, giving instructions to the driver. I notice the language she speaks to the driver is German. His dark glasses make him appear to be blind, which is nonsense, as he is the driver. Nonetheless, I enter his open door and turn to say thank you to the girl. But she is gone, replaced with a blinding spot of light where she once stood. One last vulture calls out to me, "Sir, a tequila for the drive?" I fish for money with which to pay, but he will have none of it, handing me my Don Julio Blanco with incredible joy. "For you, senor, for your journey." Placing the drink in my hand, he vanishes back into the playa. As the taxi driver accelerates, I notice the tequila is in a cut crystal glass. Why would the vulture hand me such a thing? I begin to ask the driver if he knows where my resort is. He answers before I can make a sound, "Yes, everything has been prepared." 3. Hermann Hesse wrote his first book of poetry in his early 20s, following the publication of his poem Madonna in the Viennese periodical. Though a failure financially, it did open doors, and his first novel, Peter Commensine, gave him fame by his 30s. So much fame, in fact, that he could continue as a writer due to the popularity of his novel after Sigmund Freud praised it, declaring it as one of his favorites. Hesse went on to write Beneath the Wheel, Siddhartha, Steppenwolf, Narcissus and Goldman, and many others, and then he wrote the book that won him the Nobel Prize in Literature, The Glass Bead Game. All of this, of course, is history, found in any number of perfunctory books for learned readers. What is not found, however, are the elusive tomes, the letters from Hesse to his mother. When she died in 1902, Hesse did not attend her funeral. Despite his love for his mother, he could not bring himself to attend her funeral. the resulting writing that ensued from the psychological break of having his mother die and not having the stamina to bury her, attend her funeral even, has long been rumored a treasure trove of literary excellence. I ponder these thoughts while traveling dusty, winding roads that lead to the Pacific. My driver has not said a word apart from his original statement, and I have not asked further questions. As we crest a small hill, I can view the wide expanse of ocean that is the Pacific. To my right, and at a great distance, there appears to be the silhouette of a coyote howling. It is dusk now, and the light is extremely dim, but it seems as if I can view friend Coyote as if he were sitting next to me. I can feel his breath, see the multi-textures of his coat. Just then a great gate opens and my driver gives out a coarse, "We have arrived," in German. With no further fanfare, I gather my belongings and notice with quite a shock, I still hold the cut crystal glass of tequila. I have not touched it since the entire journey to this resort. I down it now with one great gulp. Hola, senor. Welcome. Part 4. The land of the Olmecs has greatly changed in these modern times. No longer is the land barren, devoid of life, at least life that a gringo would know. There is water to nurture the landscaping brought to this place, radiant and blossoming hedges filled with multicolor flowers. The earth is rich and dense with growth. Commoners, middle-class citizens, if you will, come here from many countries to escape, if only for a week, two at the most. I am told the wealthy frequent it as well, though commoners such as myself are not allowed to view them. In town, there is still much of the gritty fishing village to wander. There are many streets to explore, many shops that offer refuge from the midday heat. But on the outskirts of town, away from the fishmongers, the tourist shops with brightly printed shirts screaming, "Cabo!" it is a different world. Here on a peninsula where ersatz revolutionaries once took summer breaks in canvas lean-tos, playing Federale's token payments to camp on the peninsula, agreeing to buy drugs only from them. Yes, it was all an elaborate game back then. Who would want to come to a desolate place where water and food were miles away and Mexican police were the only law you needed to be occupied with? Unequaled madmen that understood social isolation comes with a cost as they reveled in the hot, barren sand. The ersatz revolutionaries saved all year long to finance the cost of a summer in paradise. Dry, arid, with the ocean on one side, a magnificent bay on the other, it was as if this peninsula was created from pure magic. Those who understood magic, or so they told themselves, would make their pilgrimage, bringing money for the Federales in order to enjoy a few weeks of enlightenment. But, as with all things magic, society took over. Developers paid the Federales even more money, creating ways to charge pilgrims far more than the Federales ever asked, and developers turned arid, what some saw as wasted land, into an oasis of luxury, building hundreds, thousands of rooms on the beach and on the hillsides overlooking the ocean. They created their own utopia. Created their own water supply by using the sea, their wits, and the pilgrims' money to provide people a place where their fantasies could become real, a place where meals and beverages were to become all-inclusive. Time-sharing would become the new norm, a dreamed utopia to be shared here on Earth. A shared utopia, I must admit, is a false statement, as we readily pay money for it to happen. I chose it. It did not choose me. Perhaps in some twisted Jungian way, me being a part of it and it being a part of me, a collective zeitgeist experience designed to humor the gods collided there on the peninsula where the spirits of Olmecs danced in the heat. So many thoughts running through my mind as well-dressed waiters, their uniforms starched and immaculate, bring endless glasses of Don Julio Blanco chilled to perfection. No, amigo, I wave a dismissive hand. I do not need a lime. 5. The image of a small girl in her pretty pink hair ribbon is stuck in my mind. How did she know my fascination with Hess? How could she possibly know? The driver that brought me, why did he speak German? Was I hallucinating? Was it all a dream? I wake with a terrible sweat, my body dripping, my sheets soaked. You really should slow down on the tequila. I look over to where the voice is coming from, but I see only a couch. Am I now hearing my hallucinations? Really, you've been in a daze since we left Phoenix. I recognize the voice, but in the dimly lit room, I simply cannot see. Where are you? I cry out. Show yourself to me, I demand. A dense shadow rises from a chair on the opposite side of the room. The shadow reaches to pull back draperies as morning light spills across a familiar form. It is my wife, Mrs. America. Can you see me now, you crazed bastard? I sink into the sheets that are wet. I have soaked the bed. My head is swirling, my vision blurred. You cannot be here. You're at home, I stammer. The shadow moves towards me. I gave you a sedative in Phoenix, as I know how anxious you become when you fly. The gravity of her words slowly sink into me, pressing down upon me as if they were great weights. Our layover took much longer than expected, so I put a couple more in your drink to tide you over. Obviously, I gave you too much. I recall drinking a rather sweet-tasting tequila as we sat in the airport bar, sweeter than any I've ever had. I thought for sure you were going to get us both thrown out of the country when we landed, but when customs checked you for fever, you became lucid when I needed you to be lucid. Fever? I whisper. Yes, fever. We're traveling during the time of the Rona. Did you completely fry your brain? Images of laughing with a customs agent begin to appear. We joke about drinking tequila and flying and how his brother gets the same way. A clarity is forming, as if a great call has been removed. You're a fucking lunatic, my dear, but I have to hand it to you the way you cleared out the overzealous vendors as we left the airport. Sheer genius. The morning light grew brighter. A tremendous roaring ran across my mind. It's morning, babe. Our room is right on the ocean. Look, there's the ocean, not 50 feet from our patio. I look past the draperies and see waves. What I thought was a roaring sound in my mind is actually the ocean. I'm hearing the ocean. I can smell the ocean. I'll call room service and have them bring us coffee. Perhaps a bread basket? She talks with him on the phone as I stumble to the patio, falling into a chair. I cannot remember ever sitting in such a comfortable chair. I look out onto the ocean. The sun is just rising. I watch it crest the horizon, illuminating the day. Mrs. America joins me on the patio where we watch the sunrise together. A knock at the door from room service brings me back to full consciousness. Mrs. America brings out a tray with coffee and an assortment of breakfast breads to the patio. The image of the girl remains burned into my mind. But the girl, I begin to stammer. That was a lovely thing you did, offering to help her like that. I cannot recall offering to help anyone. Really, it was very sweet. The way she looked after dropping her ice cream, she was devastated. You were very sweet for offering to replace it. And the cab driver? What cab driver, dear? There was only a driver for our shuttle. That little girl thanked you repeatedly for replacing her ice cream, even as we drove off. It was really very touching. But she said she knew I desired the hidden writings of Hess. Mrs. America sighed. On the flight down from Phoenix, a group of college boys were arguing about Hess. One of them thought he was a terrible writer, and you flew into a rage. In the deep recesses of my mind, I do recall arguing with the ass end of a horse. I am so sorry to have given you those pills. I had no idea you would react like that. I'm so, so sorry. So the whole thing was a hallucination? A dream? I didn't realize you were sneaking shots of tequila whenever I was not looking. The tequila and the pills had you in quite a stupor. This news is incredulous. So the driver was not German? No, he was a shuttle driver for the resort we were staying at. He's from the Yucatan. You were making a bit of a scene, and he was going to say something to the manager, but I tipped him well, and he just simply drove off. We sit together in silence, drinking coffee on our patio in Cabo. As I gaze out over the ocean, a gray whale not more than 50 yards from me breaches the water and turns, lifting his mighty fin as if to welcome me, to Cabo, to consciousness, to home. He splashes back into the ocean with a mighty spray. I turn to my wife, but she is gone, disappeared into the room to order more coffee. I sit there, not certain if I really saw the whale or not. Was it all in my mind? Was it a holdover from the drug she had given me, from the tequila, from my overactive mind? Was that not the greatest thing you've ever seen? There is a well-tanned and extremely fit man in workout shorts wearing neon red tennis shoes yelling at me from the pathway next to our patio. My God, I've never seen a whale up close like that before. It was beautiful. It was, I shakily agree, not quite certain if he is real. My name's Dennis. I'm in the room 3 doors down. Welcome to Cabo. He steps towards me, reaching out his hand. I shake it, breathing a sigh of relief, feeling that it is, indeed, flesh.